than 200 years, we Owens women have been blamed for everything that has ever gone wrong in this town.
Is that why people hate us so much, Aunt Frances?
They don't hate us, sweetheart. We make them a little nervous.
Let's face it, Chet. We Owens women have always created a stir. It all began with your ancestor, Maria. She was a witch. The first in our family. And you, my darlings, are the most recent in a long and distinguished line.
Is that why they wanted to hang her? Because she was a witch?
Well, the fact that our Aunt Maria was a bit of a heartbreaker didn't help. Nor did it help that most of her lovers had wives on the hanging committee. But no, I don't think it was either of those reasons. They feared her because she had a gift. A power that has been passed on to you children. She had the gift of magic.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and today we are Samless, but Trish Coughlin is with us again today.
I made it.
I don't know who those pretenders were last week. It was a little weird.
I know. I don't know, but we've clawed back our podcast, so we're good.
Those guys last week gave Jeff a promotion.
They did, and it seems really unfair to unpromote him.
It's true.
He's been here enough.
Once you open to the box, you can't close it again.
Exactly.
It is true. He survived the airlock. He survived a lot of stuff from us. So,
yeah.
All right. He can stay lieutenant.
Excellent. Right. It's new. It's restructuring. It happens everywhere.
Jeff Omega back in the house.
I am.
But he did bring his better half.
Yeah.
Amelia Alpha, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
So this is our Valentine's Day special, I guess. We didn't do one last year.
No.
We just did Women in Horror all month long, and don't worry, that's still coming.
Yeah.
But this one kind of counts towards that in some ways, a little bit.
There's some horrific elements to it.
There are some horror movie elements in it.
Yes, which is something we're going to definitely talk about with the tonal shifts of Practical Magic from 1998, which barely made the cutoff. 1998 is, I kind of have like a, not a rule per se, but about a 20-year rule. So, like, I don't like to hit anything that's... starts encroaching on the 2000s. To me, that's still too new, but you know, now that it's 20 years ago, I'm going to say our cutoff is at the year 2000.
Exactly.
Still, but maybe in another couple of years, if we're still doing this,
we're going to have to
to start shifting forward as the 2000 babies are now old enough to vote. And
this movie is old enough to drink in the U.S.
It is, yes.
So I think that counts.
Well, yeah. I guess. You can hit on it in a bar now, so.
Yeah. You can. Shouldn't, but you can.
Well, if they look like Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman.
Absolutely.
It's going to be tough not to.
True.
So, yes, we're going to be talking about Practical Magic from 1998, and this does kind of fall in that romantic comedy category that I loathe.
You do.
But guess what? I've actually seen this movie before. I wasn't sure last week, but as I was watching the movie, there was like, well, that's familiar. And then as I got deeper, I'm like, oh, I remember that. I don't know when I saw it, who I saw it with. It could have been through my
video store.
Well, that could have been, but I think I was done with that at that point. I went through like I'll watch anything with Nicole Kidman phase.
Nice.
So it might have been in that territory, or it might have been when I was dating somebody who actually liked romantic comedies and I had to sit through it.
You know, one thing we were talking about the other day is it's interesting because it seems like it gets billed as a romantic comedy a lot, but It does have some romantic comedy elements, but I feel like it mostly gets categorized there for lack of a better place to put it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know what? The romantic comedy doesn't kick in for a good 45 minutes or more.
Yeah. It is mostly a movie about sisters.
Yeah, like it is about love, but it's about familial love and those familial mm-hmm. bonds. So mm-hmm. I think that's why it gets sort of in the romantic comedy thing is because it involves love. Just they don't know where else to put it unless it's in romance. Mm-hmm. But love is a lot of different things.
No, I totally agree. What about you guys? I assume, Jeff, this was your first time based on what you said last week.
Yeah, I've never seen it before. And yeah. I know it's one of Leah's favorites for a long time. And I've been meaning to watch it for a while. And I was excited to get the opportunity.
Okay, why is this one of those movies you go back to?
I just love the witches.
But that is so unlike you.
Right?
That is so unusual.
What? Me liking movies about witches? No, never.
No, no. When was the last time you put on The Witch?
I haven't actually watched it in probably a couple months at least. I know.
What is going on with you?
El Scandalos.
Revoke your witch membership card.
Well, I think when we get to casting a little bit later, you're going to like what I did with it.
Nice. How interesting.
As far as my casting goes, I have lots of cameos from people who have been in witch movies or Ooh. Witch TV shows. Oh,
nice.
Stuff.
Nice direction.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, well, if this is going to be a romantic comedy, let's Easter egg the shit out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, one thing we were kind of... It came up a little bit. I kind of wanted to refrain from talking about it very much until we were on the show, but one thought I had while we were watching it was, really, it is an interesting movie to remake now because witchcraft and feminism in the late 90s kind of mean different things then than they do now. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. they're both... It was really relevant then, and it is pretty relevant now, but because it is pretty different, you'd have to reconcile that, which would make it actually pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just mm-hmm. In the last 22 years since this movie came out, which is baffling to even say. The shift in society and how feminism has grown in that amount of time, and it's taken great leaps, which it's baffling that it even took that long. But but yes, I think the Hollywood, I think, still sees the value in this movie, mm-hmm. despite its big cast. It was a box office failure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Despite opening at number one, no less.
Man.
Yeah.
Wow.
It seems like it... Well, so I guess before we get into it too much further, there's one thing I read earlier today, which I thought was very interesting about this movie. And so I was reading an interview with the director, and the director was saying... It was an interview with Vulture.com, and the director mm-hmm. was saying that there was somebody who he met through a friend who was a witch who he had as a consultant on the movie. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the spells and a lot of the witch aspects of the movie and ingredients and just various mm-hmm. lifestyle things all pretty much came from this person. And a lot of the whole aspects he credits in the interview of the realization that the movie he wanted to make was about strong women and mm-hmm. growing up with like people who were strong in your life, because apparently in the book, the ants are not really a role very much. So anyway, he has this witch who's a consultant, and they get further enough along, and then she says that she wants more money. She wants $250,000 extra dollars, and she wants to have a piece of the movie. And it was a bit too much. Mm-hmm. And so he said, I'm sorry, I can't do that. You've been paid pretty well, but I just can't. And so apparently she hexed the movie, and she called him on the phone, and she like cursed him, and she like spoke in tongues, and then she like left a message on his voicemail, and everyone who listened to it like couldn't listen to the whole thing.
See, and there's extortion rackets even in paganism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and apparently he said that that's one thing that's been on his mind, because the movie tested really, really well, and it was mm-hmm. on track to do really well, and for all reasons. I mean, depending on whether or not you liked the movie, like it's pretty good. It had a good cast.
Yeah,
it should have done better than it did.
It is interesting you say that. Mm-hmm. I had heard that there were, especially during the ritual scene near the end of the movie, that there were like supernatural goings on. They'd hear whispers on that set. So interesting that there might be a curse, and that curse could still be active because they did try to remake this as a television series. A pilot was made for a series called Sudbury, Sudbury, Massachusetts, I do believe, and a decent cast, no less. It was the showrunner was, or at least the director of the pilot was Brian Spicer. And the show was going to star Kim Delaney, Jerry Ryan, and Kat Dennings. Wow. So it was a heck of a cast. So it's kind of fascinating they didn't get picked up. And they did try again, I think, back in 2010.
Wow.
And I don't even know if it got to the pilot stage. So curse continues.
Well, and what's so weird is, like, when I've talked to people about this movie, a lot of people I know enjoy this movie. So it's sort of a mystery about that. But there's another part of it too. I've got this on DVD because I bought it because I like it, and I was watching all, like, the behind the scenes stuff and listening to the commentary. The other part of it is the exterior of the house. That was all, that all whole facade was constructed on protected land in Washington State, a Native American burial ground. So what they had to do was the whole entire facade, the whole house is built on a platform. The garden is all on a raised platform. What they had to do is they could not disturb the soil or break ground in any way. And so that's what they did. But they said when they got it, when they took it down, they did everything they were supposed to. And they're like, the ground underneath it was still good when they were done. They had to get it down on a certain date, which is the date right after their last day of shooting. So if they went over, they were screwed.
Yeah, the house itself was a shell of a house. So like the actual interiors were somewhere
on a soundstage.
Yeah.
And it was, but yeah, like the interiors, the outside of the house really does make you think of, like, the interiors, like, they matched what they were doing really quite well, and the whole look of the house is very
year building that.
Yep. Beautiful.
The woman who was the interior designer as well after that movie, a lot of people loved the look of the house so much that because of that movie she has a huge career as an interior designer for, like, the rich and famous now, just because of that movie.
Well, in that house, people came by, they wanted to buy it. People all over the place were wanting to buy this house. We're like, well, do we? If we have to move it somewhere, we'll move it somewhere. But it was just a facade. So, and this, but this woman had worked with the director Griffin Dunne on Addicted to Love, and he brought her in, and she just created this entire world with this whole house and this greenhouse, which was just amazing.
Oh, the set design is really spectacular on the movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's actually well shot. The town's really charming that they shot in.
It's actually in Washington State.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not where it says it sort of is, which would be on the East Coast. I think it was Maine.
Yeah, I think it was Maine-ish area where the actual setting was. Which, you know, we all know that Maine, that's where creepy shit goes on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. Truly.
Maine and Massachusetts, you've got pilgrims, witchcraft, that's the whole bit.
And then whatever happens to wander into Stephen King's head that day.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And maybe that's the curse of this. It's like, how dare a non-Stephen King thing be shot here?
I know.
Actually, you know, that's another thing that I was thinking about just a little bit. Interesting that there was a witch consultant on the movie that was an individual person who subscribes to, obviously, her own beliefs about witchcraft rather than, you know, late 90s peak Wicca time. The movie's not really Wiccan at all. And that's very interesting because, by all accounts, it should be. So I think that the witchcraft in that movie is a lot more in line with what people kind of do now. And it's pretty interesting.
And, like, it definitely feels like real old world witchcraft as opposed to Wicca, which is all, like, oftentimes, like, the love and light kind of thing. Whereas all the magic they practice in the movie is a lot darker, more grounded.
And it's interesting because I wonder if in the book it's more Wiccan, because there's a lot of love and light type aspects of the some of the magic that they do. Like, their aunts are known for making, like, love potions and stuff and, like, breaking up people's marriages, right?
Well, it's not love and light.
Well, when they do, it's weird. Their whole thing for bringing Jimmy back, it's like dark as night and then love is light, like white as light is part of the whole incantation.
I guess it is pretty gray.
So there's part of it that's in there, but it was sort of, it's, I think what they did was it's sort of, there is that love and light sort of Wiccan thing, but then they acknowledge that there are darker aspects you can just, like, wander into that are, like, the offshoots of what they were truly trying to practice.
Now, do you think maybe that mixed message, just in what they were portraying on screen through the Wicca and everything else, is at heart of what why this movie failed? Like, okay, here's this story essentially about love and light, but they were doing black magic within this film. And there's some dark shit that actually goes on in this movie. And
yeah, surprisingly, like, there's a serial killer in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah, like, there's some surprising darkness in the movie.
Yeah, and then they bury him out in the yard.
Yeah.
Yeah, no big.
Lots of frogs show up all the time.
Yeah, like, that. Actually, that whole scene where he has Nicole Kidman in the back of the car, and he's, like, going to try to brand her, and Sarah Nina Sandra Bullock is driving. It's like, it was pretty intense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, well, again, I watched this with commentary. Griffin Dunn was talking about that moment. He's like, well, yeah, we struggled with this one because we didn't know. It got real, real dark. Mm-hmm. So it was like, his producer was really good. He's like, oh, she would kind of push me to go more schmaltzy in some of the stuff. But I'm like, but that was sort of the balance. She was more on the lighter side. And I'm like, no, we need to go dark because this is who Jimmy is. We can't really sugarcoat it because we got to make sure that we understand what happened and why.
Yeah. Totally. And so truly paint him as a villain as well, because he is.
And he was supposed to be just your regular American Texan redneck. And then he met Goran Visnjic, and he's like going, oh, yeah, Croatian. He's like going, Croatian, but like really in love with the cowboy stuff. Like, oh, that's a different direction we can take it in. Because it didn't make sense. He's like, it didn't make sense Jillian would fall in love with like some redneck guy. No, he's got to be charming in a different way for her to want to be with him.
And even like when we see that as they grow up in this house and whatnot, and then they separate, it's Jillian, Nicole Kidman's character, who's after that true love, where it's Sandra Bullock's character of Sally, who wants to avoid it at all costs because the curse on their family, the self-made curse on their family, is the true loves, the male will always die. Mm-hmm. And we set that up at the beginning of the film, and it's interesting that the one who least wanted to find it is the one who found it, and the other one, I think, misunderstands what true love actually is. It seems to me she's just more in it for the kinky sex part.
Well, I don't even think it's so much that. It's like, she wants love, but I think she kind of understands, like, no, if I don't go deep enough, I might be okay. Or if I find somebody who's, maybe he loves me a lot and I don't love him as much, he'll be safe. Which is a weird way of looking at it, but it might be something that you could do. You can get the love, but still protect yourself. Well, sort of, I think, what she's getting at.
Yeah, and as we see them growing up as kids, too, we're trying to figure out what their power is. And Sandra Bullock takes to the magic and the casting very well, whereas Nicole Kidman can't seem to quite get it, and they're trying to figure out what it is, and it really is this sexual energy that she has within herself.
I think that, and also portending, like, her, she's more of the foretelling type of deal. I think that's what, but she never really leaned into that because that's not what she wanted to do. She wanted to be a good caster, but that was one of those things.
It probably would have come in really handy. As we saw, she could have cheated on her homework rather easily.
Yeah, exactly. I know. It's one of those things, maybe.
She can change paperwork. She should have been just...
Speaking of, she should have been working
at the DMV or something.
Absolutely. Well, that's a whole other theme too. Ignoring your gifts. Yeah. Like, Sally's ignoring her. She's very skilled at that. She doesn't want them. And Jillian, what she is talented at, she probably doesn't want to be talented at. She wants to be talented at somebody else. So it's like turning your back on your gifts is also kind of another very underlying theme of this movie.
Once Sally found love in a normal life as a parent and having a family, and then what magic had cost her. Yeah, I don't blame her for not wanting to have anything to do with
it. Oh, for sure. Well, and the ants, I mean... Yeah, they made a bad mistake. Like, she's like, we didn't, like, they thought they were helping. They really did. Mm-hmm. They didn't think it was true, true love. And I guess that also made the whole point is, with the casting, it wasn't true love that would kill somebody. It was just loving any man that might have done it.
Well, you know, you pass some dude on the street carrying some groceries out, some fruits and vegetables in a cart, and hey, yeah, you know, you gotta go. Run after him, mack on him in slow motion the
with some country
music
playing.
Oh, he's very cute in this movie, though. Don't get me wrong. I would go there.
That quickly, eh?
Yep.
Okay. What about Aidan Quinn?
Actually, yes. There's something about him.
It's weird because he made a career out of these kind of romantic comedies and not much else, really. Like, that's kind of what he did.
It's really interesting because he was fairly decent as a detective character.
Yeah. But a very unconventional-looking man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's something about him. It's a very kind of Legends of the Fall. Like, he seems like a really decent guy. that it's you're like
salt of the earth quality.
Yeah, like you can feel safe with this person. He's not going to be horrible. Even if he's mad at you, he's not going to be terrible. You know what I mean? Like, even if you frustrated him, he's pretty even tempered. He'll be like, okay, I get it's not about me. Like, he knows things.
Right.
Like, so when Nicole Kidman was just like, or was it Nicole Kidman or was it Sandra Bullock, where she was like, you've never hit a woman in anger in your life?
Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, Nicole Kidman. It wasn't as much reading his palm. That's just him in general. It's the vibe he gives.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. They were struggling with casting him, and then they found Aidan Quinn because he had this quality.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go to the trailer for Practical Magic, and then we'll come back and talk some more about the film.
The Owen sisters are two beautiful witches.
Hang on to your husbands, girls.
With one wicked problem.
She has the worst taste in men.
Any man they fall for falls victim to a deadly curse.
Any man who wins the heart of an Owens woman is bound to end up 6 feet under.
And as hard as they try,
oh my God!
They can't keep their loves.
I feel like I'm never going to see you again.
Look out!
Alive.
It was an accident.
It was fate.
It was the curse, wasn't it?
Now, a detective.
Is he cute? In a very penal code sort of way, yeah.
Is looking for answers.
Did you or your sister kill James Angelo?
Oh, yeah.
But the only kind of magic.
You just look familiar.
We never met before. I would remember it if we had.
That can break the evil spell.
What would you do, Jerry?
What wouldn't I do for the right guy?
Is the magic of two people.
Magic isn't just spells and potions.
Who discover the power.
What I'm saying is, I'm a witch.
No, all relationships have a problem.
Of true love. Sandra Bullock, Nicole Kidman, Practical Magic.
That was Practical Magic from 1998. And this was directed by Griffin Dunne, who really, this was his big movie.
He was Griffin Dunne.
Well, the next most recognizable thing on his resume was movie 43.
Ooh.
Oh, but he also did Addicted to Love, which was pretty good. And American Werewolf in London. Let's never forget.
Well, he was
involved. He didn't direct it, but he was in it.
Oh, yeah, as an actor.
When you talk career-wise.
No, as a director, yeah, not so much.
No.
As an actor, he did some stuff. Based on the novel by Alice Hoffman and the screenplay, it did some rounds. There were three writers for the screenplay. Mm-hmm. Robin Swycord, who did some amazing stuff. Curious Case of Benjamin Button, Matilda, mm-hmm. Little Women, Memoirs of a Geisha.
Wow. Like,
got some cred on that one.
Well, for magical realism, Benjamin Button.
Yeah.
And you got Matilda for, like, magic.
Akiva Goldsman has a little bit more in television.
Akiva Goldsman is, I'm pretty sure it's the same person. The person I always like to point out, you know, you can write a script as good as A Beautiful Mind, but you can also write a script that is Batman and Robin.
Yes.
Well, yes, because we actually, back in episode one, tackled one of his scripts, and that was I Am Legend.
Ooh.
And he also did the rather inferior threequel to Rings.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So Rings, The Dark Tower, which I actually just watched last night.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, oof. I can see why that didn't go any further.
Mm-hmm.
Transformers, The Last Night.
Yeah.
And then things get a little bit better on television. He's the creator of Titans for the DC mm-hmm. Universe and Star Trek Picard.
Oh. Nice.
So things have kind of picked up for him in that regard. And then Adam Brooks was the third one who wrote Bridget Jones, Edge of Reason, whichever one that is.
The second one.
All right.
Bridget Jones, Edge of Tomorrow.
I'm here to fill in those romantic yeah. comedy blanks for you. That is my job today.
It is. It is. Movie was budgeted at $75 million because Nicole Kidman and...
makes sense.
Yeah, Sandra Bullock don't come cheap. They were probably catching... $20 million a piece, I would think.
Yeah, I guess Sandra Bullock especially would have been pretty big, hot, like late 90s.
Oh, Kidman too.
Well, yeah. Speed was 94.
Yeah, Sandra was just getting really hot.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it's surprising that the movie bombed, really.
I mean, yeah, given the two pedigree actors there.
People love Sandra
And they
Bullock.
Had great chemistry together. Opened at number one in the box office for its opening weekend at a little over $13 million, and then it went on to gross $68.3 million worldwide.
Wow.
So it didn't even make its budget back.
The curse.
I know, but I bought my DVD. I did my part.
One day this movie will make a profit.
It will.
One day.
Someday.
It's like
no, Dread. It will never make a profit.
There's lots of good movies out there. Then fans will just continually buy copies of the movies, hoping that it'll one day make money.
This movie probably would have made money if Nicole and Sandra took scale.
Yeah.
All right, starring Sandra Bullock, who we have talked about once before in episode 146. Do you remember that one, Trish?
Oh my gosh. It's gone.
It was a fear of being buried alive.
Fear of being buried alive? Oh my god, I'm going to kick myself.
During Fear Month. Okay, well that was The Vanishing.
That's it.
And of course she was in Speed, as you mentioned, and Gravity. Mm-hmm. Nicole Kidman, we've never actually talked about before on this show, but it's...
Surprising, she's in some remakes.
She is.
Stepford Wives.
Well, we'll get there.
It's because
troubling.
It's because we can't do Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah.
Because there's too many.
Yeah, that's another one she did was Invasion, and one of my favorites is Moulin Rouge. I love Moulin Rouge.
Yeah, and she's in a lot of remakes.
And the others is good as well.
Yeah.
Man.
Stalker Channing was Aunt Frances, and she was wonderful in this movie. Mm-hmm. People know her from Grease and 6 Degrees of Separation. She was in lots of good stuff.
She was in Grease. Yes. That just clicked in my brain.
Do you remember who she was?
Can't remember the names. I'm terrible.
She was Rizzo, I think.
Yeah. Rizzo, and she was like 31, I think, when she did Grease.
Yeah.
But
I have to say, I'm honestly stalkered. If you can like realistically pull off much younger when you're 31, good on you.
Yeah, totally.
And she looks wonderful in this movie.
She does.
What does she do? She might actually be a witch.
She might. She actually might. Diane Wiest was Aunt Jet, and she was in Lost Boys, Footloose, Edward Scissorhands, lots of stuff people know. Goran
Visnjic.
Sure, that guy. He was the evil Jimmy Angelou, who was in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh. And one? I mean, the American one.
And Elektra.
I think he was
Also... Really? Only those two?
Well, that's all I wrote down. I'm not going to list the... I don't write down the entire resume.
I'm going to go through all
of them. You know what? My expectations
I like to have
went,
a good one and a bad one.
My expectations went so low for this person that it just... I immediately assumed that was it.
Well, he went... I think he did a stint on ER as well, and then...
Yeah, he's been around.
He's done a lot.
Aidan Quinn's always stayed fairly busy, and he was Gary Hallett, the police officer in this movie. You mentioned Legend of the Fall. Sam would probably hit me if I didn't mention Benny and June.
Oh, yes. Yes, Benny and June.
And he was Benny.
Yep.
Evan Rachel Wood was Kylie, which was one of the kids. It was cool to see her as a child actor because I probably didn't take note of her until Across the Universe.
Yeah.
Which was excellent. And most people would probably have seen her recently in Westworld.
And she broke through in like 13, like shortly after this movie. She's... got a pretty good career.
Yeah, and the sibling to her character was Alexandra Artrip, who was Antonia. This was her last movie. She decided, acting ain't for me.
Hey, she knows what she wants at that age. Good on her.
Yeah.
At least she can retire on the royalties from...
Something she did before this. Mark Feuerstein was Michael, and that was the father.
That was the husband of Sandra Bullock's
that
character.
That died at the beginning of the movie. He was in Wet Hot American Summer, the Netflix TV series, 10 years later. Caprice Bennett was Maria Owens, and that was the flashback of the witch who was being hung, but managed to save herself. Magic. And Caprice Benetti was in Shaft and Hitch.
Nice.
Yeah. So that kind of rounds out my cast. The rest is kind of extras.
Yeah, well, they've got several kind of people that I knew their faces when they were in this movie. Like the other sort of witch girl who works at the shop. I think it's Chloe.
Oh, the blonde?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was in the Sid Vicious movie.
Was she in The Matrix?
She was Sid and Nancy.
Was she the blonde in the white in The Matrix?
I don't know.
Everybody was wearing black except for her.
Yeah, no, she wasn't.
No?
That wasn't her.
I meant to look her up, and I never got around to
it. Yeah, she played Nancy in Sid and Nancy.
Okay.
And then there's character... I've been watching BoJack Horseman, so there was also character actress Margot Martindale.
Okay.
Who was also in this movie.
I'm way behind on BoJack.
She's one of those... But she's one of those actresses, and I do mention this in BoJack. You've seen her in everything, doing all sorts of stuff.
There are quite a few, like... recognizable TV actors in here as well that fill out the town as far mm-hmm. as characters go, especially the women around town, because the town itself treats the witches rather horribly. They've got the family name has just been carried from generation to generation to generation, mm-hmm. despite being modern day, and they're still very leery of the witches.
Yep.
Witch, you're a witch.
And she's like, hundreds of years and they haven't come up with a better rhyme.
I was surprised, like, they weren't walking down the street and some punk was going, didn't go, murder! Considering how dark this movie gets at times.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm so surprised.
I feel like in the late 90s, I was thinking about it a little bit, and I feel like there was still a lot of, like, anti-witchcraft, anti-rock and roll type things still going on around the same time. Like, Antichrist Superstar was coming out. There was, like, an anti-Satanism thing people were really afraid of still.
Yeah.
I think it was still was on the fringes of the end of Satanic Panic a little bit.
Well, that's...
I feel like people are a lot more accepting now, generally.
Yeah. Well, they did put it in the movie where he's, like, going, it's like, they say you're in devil worship, and Sandra Bullock's like, there's no devil in the craft. Like, you have to know this. It's so weird. And the other woman's like, yeah, you get those outliers, you know, ritual human and disembowelment, blah, 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 but that's really rare.
But there's actually a lot of good, like, jokes in the movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They do manage to kind of defuse some of the darker aspects of this film.
Yeah.
You know, when she does go, Sally does go rescue her sister from this dude, and that gets really dark and pretty scary. I you know, even as you're watching it, it doesn't feel dark. Like, even though it's like, man, he's getting awfully rapey and might even kill her.
Uh-huh.
And we find out, later, that probably was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm trying to figure out a way to iron this movie out a little bit. Like, I mean, did it have to get quite that dark? I mean, I guess you could allude to that stuff without actually showing it.
Yeah, or you could have it whereas, you know, she's already gotten away from Jimmy. She hasn't gone on this big trip with him, and she's just hiding out, and Sally's coming to get her, and he's just followed her. Like, it kind of alludes to that whole thing, but yeah, I don't know. It's a hard call.
It is a tough call, yeah.
I love the idea that it was sort of they're backed into a corner simply because of the poisoning. If they'd killed him with the frying pan in the first place, it probably wouldn't have been a problem.
This movie kind of reminds me in a way of like The Frighteners, which
I was going to say that actually earlier while I was watching it.
Yeah, because it watches a lot darker than I think it was intended to, that movie.
There were like both movies that felt pretty light that turned into a movie about a ghost serial killer.
Yeah.
Which is like a pretty huge drastic shift.
Yeah. You know, possesses one of the main characters after
the murder. I mean, I love The Frighteners. I'm not against
it. I like the movie too, but it's always suffered from a weird tonal imbalance, and this movie does too, and it's a much harder problem to fix. You have that nice, almost fairy tale narration happening at the beginning while you're watching a hanging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
And it's like right away. It's like, well, what's going on? Why is this sounding so wonderful and fun as you're telling this this terrible story to children?
And that's weird when I say there's a lot. The commentary has too much of the composer in it, but he does get into this. He's talking about how he's like, no, this is sort of, I'm trying to set the tone, and that this is really just a story that she's telling these children about their ancestor, and she doesn't get hung. So, I mean, it is a dark beginning, but she is safe at the end of it.
It is, but it does speak to the tonal problems of the film.
Yeah.
And it carries on throughout. And I really like how it starts with that kind voices through the narration. And that would have been a nice way for that movie to watch and kind of fall into that more fantasy fairy tale aspects.
Mm-hmm. You know, honestly, I feel like it probably could have used it near the beginning when it was going through like the multiple years of Sandra Bullock's relationship with the person. I think it was mostly just edited in a way because it's the same actress. It's hard to convey time sometimes in the way it was kind of put together. Also with the other guy not really looking very different from the day that they first met and other stuff. A little bit of narration about their life and relationship to set it up would have maybe been nice to have.
And I would have liked to have seen just maybe a little bit more. I know, I understand just to move the story along, but maybe something about their life a little bit more. Like, I mean, I know it's a montage and it speeds the story along and he has to die to get everything else in position. But, I mean, you kind of, with some movies, like especially romantic comedies, I feel that you have to kind of not just watch these two people fall in love, but sort of fall in love with both of them at the same time.
And I'm not sure we got enough time with Michael to really feel that way about him, like even through the narrative. I mean, you see it's established that they have a happy home life and they're very happily married and they love each other very much, but do we as an audience feel that?
Exactly.
And I want him to not be afraid of the curse. I want her at some point to maybe bring it up, and there's a little bit of strife there, but he's like, look, I don't care about the curse. I love you. Is like, whatever time we have together, we've got. So
I couldn't argue with
in.
The explanation at the end, but at the same time, it was a little bit like, oh, so that's how they got out of that one. Like, what was it, this thing that lifted the curse? I'd like to think so. I can't argue that, but it's not very satisfying.
No. I kind of liked that they used, like, the Death Watch Beetle as this kind of alarm that this was going to happen. But there was another thing I don't know if you noticed that I kind of appreciated, is during that scene where he's with the groceries and eventually gets hit by the truck rather than the bicycles.
That was actually pretty great.
Probably would have been better because it would have been kind of funny. But did you guys notice he was also being followed by a black dog?
Yeah.
Which is very European supernatural.
That's
lore.
Actually pretty interesting.
That's such a cool detail. I totally missed that.
I remember that one because the dog's sort of barking at him. He's like, oh, hey, boy. And like, it's not a mean bark. The dog is just like, dude. And the dog.
Another portent.
And the dog, if you notice, it's a very small detail. When all those bikers come around the corner, the dog is sitting there, like, looking at them, watching them go by. The dog is a witness to the whole thing.
Man.
That dog's got shifty eyes.
I know. But he's such a sweet dog. He's just trying to help.
Just like, hey, buddy. Oh. I tried.
Like when, when I was a puppy, this was so easy. I was cute. They just follow me. It was great.
For that dog, it was the equivalent of Sandra Bullock seeing him on the street. A little bit. The dog was like, he seems so safe.
Yes.
He seems so handsome.
I think so, yeah.
I want to run up to him in slow motion.
Well, what was funny was when she goes running after him, it's all the dogs following her. That's such a funny detail.
Right? That's one detail I don't understand. Like, where all these dogs come from that she's running with? There's like four or six dogs.
I think
dogs.
They just smell magic or something like that. And the dogs are like, we got to check this out.
This seems fun. Shania Twain is playing. Yep. She's running in slow motion. This is awesome, guys.
Yeah. She's covering some good ground in rubber boots. It's hard to run in those.
Yeah.
Like, there's like some popular country sounding type music that's in romantic comedies of the late 90s playing.
Yep. Yeah. Oh wait, was that Shania Twain or Faith Hill?
No, that was the This Kiss. So what is that Faith Hill? I'm the last guy you should ask about country music.
Yeah.
I know.
My
there
brother
was like,
would know.
Well, it's the Shania Twain, Faith Hill thing where it's and we're getting more of it now again, is the country pop crossover stuff.
Yeah.
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 Like early Taylor Swift or something.
Yeah.
Welcome to the podcast, everyone.
Exactly. And now you've got someone, I don't know, it's Billy Ray Cyrus and somebody else that has been that song that's been on the radio.
As us old people, we should know, and then the young people should also know. But
exactly.
I think Taylor Swift would have been six.
Yeah. But when she first started out, she was a country star, and now look at her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's evolved into the highest Pokemon she can be.
She has evolved. But yeah, no, I think we need to have...
She does like to catch them all.
Yeah. Yeah, no, getting across that is like getting past the curse. I mean, that's one of the major themes as well. Is like, yeah, this sisterly love and magic, like that's...
Yeah, and the first half of this film is really about Sally dealing with loss. Mm-hmm. And this bond between her and her sister that crosses time zones and borders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So... during this massive depression she's in, Jilly comes to visit, secretly no less. Mm-hmm. Even the ants didn't know she was there. Because when she turns up again after she's rescued, it's like this is the first time they've seen her in a long, long time.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But there are points in this movie that there are big time gaps that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it's hard. Time is very fluid in some instances of this movie. And I sort of get they're trying to just like push it through to where it needs to go, but it's sort of like, no, why not just sit in the moment for a little bit? Just spend some time there. We've got the time.
That's one thing I was kind of thinking while I was watching it is, well, one thing that some movies do suffer from is because of their status in terms of what they are as a movie, they might get different editors.
Mm.
And if this was a movie that maybe wasn't supposed to be as much of a romantic comedy, it might have been maybe edited differently and better, because I think mostly a lot of the problems that I might have with the movie do stem from things like pacing and editing, which are, and it is, you know, edited fairly conventionally for a romantic comedy, but I feel like it deserves a little bit more than that.
Yeah, I feel one of the problems here in this movie too is you've got two really big lead actors, but it really is Sandra Bullock's movie. Mm-hmm. When we have somebody like Nicole Kidman in there, maybe you should establish a little bit of her life as well, a little bit better of what happened with her when she left. You know, we're seeing the happy family life. We should be going back and forth between the two during the same montage as to how their lives are changing and have gone differently as they've left each other.
Because they've sort of gone through, you get the one bit with Nicole Kidman by the pool, and that's pretty much it, and then you get like a postcard at one point. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like, you do kind of want to watch these two grow up to where they get to, sort of where they are in their lives, and like, yeah, you need more of that established. But even then, apparently, like in the commentary, apparently Jillian didn't have much on the page. This is more fleshed out and rounded than they had started with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Otherwise, they couldn't have gotten Nicole Kidman to sign on.
No, most definitely.
Like that is one thing I think if it was to be remade, I would lean more into they're both sisters who are both the same but opposite angle and kind of play into that a lot more.
Yeah, I think now you could probably remake this without these big names. I mean, I think part of the failure is this wasn't going to draw massive numbers or really romantic comedies right now aren't. Mm-hmm. So you do something with established character actors and let the concept breathe more.
Yeah.
You're going to have to do this a little more cheaply. Mm-hmm. There's no way really around it. I mean, you could still have the elaborate sets and stuff, but you can't be spending $40 million on your two main actors.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, and it's not even just them. Like, you have Stockard Channing and Diane Wiest, who could also bring in fairly sizable paychecks at this time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's going to be tricky because you're going to have to probably, if you want it to make money, do it for about $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably would have to be something like the people involved would probably have to do it for spec because they love it, which would ultimately, hopefully, result in a better movie. But
yeah,
I mean, I think if it was remade now, it would be very popular if it was done well.
Yeah. Now, would you go more in that, what I suggested, that fantasy fairy tale feeling that the original narration set up, or would you stick to a darker tone rather than have the constant shifting within the film?
I kind of feel like I do, like I'm a bit of a sucker for like the Pushing Daisies kind of thing where something can be like really light feeling but very morbid.
Yeah, and I kind of want to have that kind of tone, but in that kind of black comedy, but this one doesn't. It feels like when it's horror, it's horror.
Yeah, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So he's even more consistent in his tone for sure. And yeah, I think if it was something like Pushing Daisies in that kind of style where it's all really presented in a light way, but there's people dying and getting murdered, but it's all under the lens of like everything's flowery and great, but this person's dead. It's fine.
Well, what you could do with it too is when you're talking about like Pushing Daisies and you say like people dying, but in Pushing Daisies, they died in such ridiculous ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you can keep that magical fairy tale stuff where it's like somebody dies, but it's so absurd. It can't feel dark because it is a little bit funny to die that way.
Well, that's one thing.
We're gonna have to reverse the traffic. The truck misses him, but the bikers don't.
Yes, I wrote out a little like synopsis of like the type movie I would make this morning, and that was one of the things. Like the husband would have to die in a kind of spectacular way, I think, mm-hmm. to like set off the movie with a bang. Yeah. But that whole relationship, I would probably do something like Up, where it's a lot more like gestural and fairy tale like in terms of like their relationship and everything before it gets really sad, and then that's all you really need. Mm-hmm. You don't really need tons of time with her and a prior husband.
Yeah, I think there's almost too much time spent on her grief.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It slows the movie way, way down. By the time Aidan Quinn shows up, you're like, oh, right, I forgot this was a romantic comedy. Yeah.
I think I probably would also do something like, maybe she's someone who doesn't believe in the curse, and then she's someone who, you know, she's, like, known for a bit, and then they get married, and then he dies on their honeymoon or something.
Oh.
Where it's, like, they are in love, but you can't have it as established, because I think it makes it tough for audiences to like root for a character where you've already watched them fall in love with somebody else who's died. It's not like it's wrong, but I feel like it adds something to the pot that like makes it a little bit harder to be as happy for her when she finds the detective later.
I think there should be some resistance to her falling in love with the detective. And maybe, I mean, we've got the ghost of a fucking serial killer in this movie. Why can't she be talking to her dead husband as well?
Yeah.
And they sort of have the whole thing with her resistance, because it's kind of like she knows that this guy could send them both down to jail. So, but the resistance is about that fear. It's not so much about falling in love with him. I think that's sort of what it didn't really land on.
I think maybe with Michael coming back as a spirit for one poignant moment to allow her to process her grief, and in a way he's like saying, no, you need to move on.
Yeah.
It's okay. You know, you don't have to.
Or to assist her in some way.
And there's a weird commentary in this movie about writing your own fate, because as a child she was so fearful of this curse she didn't want to fall in love, so she, it's the weirdest thing, but it's a childhood logic of casting a love spell on what she considers the impossible man. I don't remember all the details about it, but he had to have one green eye, one blue eye. That one I remember. Something about a star, which
his favorite shape with a star.
Yeah, because he's a policeman.
Which wound up being his badge.
He could flip pancakes in the air.
And make them look like cactuses.
Yes.
Yeah.
That should have been additional.
That's just an added bonus.
That's an added bonus.
I'm like, I want one of those.
Yeah, they looked like, really good.
They did. Yeah,
that's a pretty crazy pancake trick.
It is.
It really is. It really is. It was a perfect cactus pancake.
Yeah, and he could flip that like a boss, man.
Absolutely. What was it? And then ride a pony backwards, forwards, any which way. I think there should have been more in it. That was just so impossible.
One thing I thought that it should have been a little bit more ridiculous.
And a wooden leg.
Because everything else that she said didn't really feel that impossible.
Well, the one blue eye and one green seemed to be the most outrageous thing she asked for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Out of everything.
Because, like, who doesn't love a star shape? Like, that's not that out of the realm of possibility.
No.
It definitely would need to be more ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want him to fully understand quantum mechanics. Good.
I mean, I feel like that is something where you have somebody request something ridiculous and it does get fulfilled, but not in the way that they expect. Would be like the way you'd handle that, maybe.
Ooh.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. It should be something ridiculous that you can turn on its head a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Oh, like you can ask, like, well, he can fly. Well, yeah, a plane.
Yeah, here's my pilot's license.
Exactly.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
He can fly. He's like over. He's like when you're a kid, maybe thinking like, oh, he's 6'5". As a kid, that seems impossible, but it's really possible.
He needs to be a giant.
Yep.
He needs to have the greatest nose in the greatest sense ever.
There
and
we
he's
go.
Good at sniffing out crime.
He's a sommelier. Yeah, sniffing out crime. There we go. Oh my God. That I love that. He seeks the truth in everything he does, and he has a great nose for smelling everything. There we go.
He can create art out of the most impossible thing. Turns out he was a barista.
Well, that's the pancakes. Yeah. How did you make it look like he's creating cactuses and he's creating like rocket ships and he's creating everything? How do you do that?
See, this is why you can't leave like an 8-year-old with the responsibility of casting a love spell. That's impossible, because like...
Exactly.
We haven't learned enough to know.
No.
You know, another thing I think would be fun for the movie, too, is at the very end, just as like a final like little thing, is for her to hear a Death Note Beetle again, and then to be like afraid, but then for it all to be fine would be a nice little cap off on the story.
Oh, or he's just like, she's like, here's the Death Beetle, and she's all worried, and he walks up to her but squishes it accidentally in the meantime.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's what I wanted to be. I'm like, nah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Not this time, bug.
Exactly. It's like when she's like, you squished the bug. Yeah, it's an annoying bug.
Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. You know,
wear your vest today.
There we go. Yeah, because as a law enforcement professional, I mean, it's bad enough that you have a curse.
Now, another thing I was kind of thinking about, I don't know if I, like, you know, feel the room a little bit. One thing I was toying with, because it was something I thought about during the movie, is the curses that a man who falls in love with them would die. And I thought maybe in a remake it'd be interesting if the Jillian character was like, I'm going to escape this because I'm a lesbian, but then the lesbian is the serial killer.
Ooh. Oh.
And it's like,
take it in a different direction.
Yeah.
Go monster with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and I feel like we don't resolve anything with her character in this film either. She's kind of ends up in the same place she started, except she's home. She's a little more comforted. It's a bit of a reset button for her, but okay, we've covered up her terrible taste in men by burying the serial killer in the backyard. Yeah.
I want her to be part of the thing where she's working on herself, but she also casts a spell against making bad decisions.
Yeah, she needs that.
Yeah, we need, I don't know. I feel like there's no real resolution to that character, and she didn't grow or learn from any of this.
Like, there is a point where she's like, that was a bad day. Like, let's bring her back from the dead after he just tried to kill me, and then she's like hitting him while she's dead, and there's actually not that much character growth that comes after that, which is very shocking. Yeah. That's still like a huge...
There's consequences to what she does. Yeah. I mean, she got into this bad relationship. They wound up killing the serial killer accidentally. I don't think they did when they put him out with the belladonna, per se. I think they thought he was dead. Mm. And then when they beat the shit out of him with the frying pan, I think that's probably what did it.
Absolutely. But I mean, she is giving him mouth to mouth, so you'd notice if somebody wasn't breathing at that point.
Yeah.
And his eyes were, you know,
that's another thing too. They were really worried about they were worried about being caught, but seems pretty cut and dry that he was a serial killer who threatened her to drive a car while he had a knife to her sister in the backseat.
But they didn't know he was a serial killer at that point.
True.
No. Yeah, he was just abusive.
They knew he was just an asshole.
That's what Aidan Quinn got later. Yeah. And there is that question of, what was he drawn to that town because of the case he was on? And, I mean, there was enough evidence they left their car behind and took his and never went back to get their car.
No.
Yeah. Like,
why? There were two of you. You could have drove your own car back. Don't you want your car?
Hey, you know what?
Right?
Yeah.
Is that why he was there asking questions? Because they left the registration in their car? Like, their car was there?
I guess. Because it's his... Or the cops had seen the license plate of Jimmy's car because he knew it was his car.
You figure, okay, you just killed somebody and you kept the car in your yard?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like...
Good at magic,
just
bad at crime.
Romance.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a lot of, like... God, this person left the driver's license. This person left the address.
Yeah, they're just bad at even covering up the crime.
Yeah, there was a lot of that in this movie for no follow-up.
And Aidan Quinn's like, they're hot. I can let it slide a little longer. I'm pretty sure they did it, but
it was an accident.
I came here looking for a serial killer, not somebody who killed the serial killer.
I think that was the whole thing. He's like going, I was looking to bring back some sort of jerk, but not the heroes who got rid of him.
Yeah, it's like, do you feel like, do you need to bring in the people who killed the serial killer?
No.
I mean, if you would have just said, he was trying to murder my sister, and he didn't fare too well.
Yeah. And in the end, that's exactly what he did.
They would have got off with a manslaughter charge.
Exactly. But in the end, that's what he does. He gets them, he's like, oh no, there was a burning building, and he put the ring in there. Oh look, this is where Jimmy died.
I love that the frog coughed that ring up just in the right moment.
Yes. That was so disgusting and wonderful. The toads have to stay. I have to say, I want them to remain.
I think sticking with the witchcraft, or at least the fantasy aspects, and that's the wonderful thing about this movie. You can kind of do what you want if you want to, because most people don't understand the craft at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, they said some words and something happened. So you can manipulate the script however you want in that regard.
Yeah.
But, the witchy crowd will probably be not so happy about it. But.
Well, I mean, like, do it as, like, do kind of like the spirit of when they think how they are doing magic, where it's like, yes, we're trying to manifest something to come to be. Not so much I'm conjuring stuff.
Yeah. I think a lot of people really cling on. Well, not cling on to. A lot of people really identify with the DIY aspect of the witchcraft in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a manifestation. When
she's like, all I could find is the whipped cream. She's like, that's perfect.
Yeah, a manifestation of intent. And it's like, whipped cream's ridiculous, but it's exactly what they needed. You need something white
substance.
A white substance to write with. It could have been toothpaste.
Yeah.
It would have worked. Toothpaste probably would have worked better, to be honest.
Yep. Yeah. Actually, when they were like tasting it, I was like, are you supposed to break that?
I thought so too.
See, I didn't think that at all. I'm like going, that's a corpse.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah. It's just a weird little thing to do.
If she'd done the squeeze into your mouth, I'm down with that.
If it had been a fresh can, I'm like, oh, good, I need to do the whip it first.
Yep.
That's the stuff. I'm slightly high.
Yes.
This will make making this spell so much easier over the dead guy.
Yeah, all right. Come on, let's witchcraft.
I mean, really, do you want to bring back the serial murderer?
Well, it was about not getting a murder charge.
I'm like,
if he was alive,
you're
he's
in Maine.
Not dead.
Did Pet Sematary teach you nothing?
See, that's kind of why.
Just dumped his body somewhere and just being done with it.
Like, I like the concept of, in the movie, I like the concept of where they're like, they come back, they're going to be evil and vile. And she's like, he's already evil and
dark
vile.
Dark and unnatural.
Yeah, yeah.
He's already dark and unnatural. How much different could he be?
Yeah. That's pretty good.
I do like that weird logic.
Yeah.
It's true.
One thing, for a remake, do you think it would work better if, I guess I may as well, do you want to get into casting?
Well, we can start going there if you want, if you think that'll more expound your point here.
Well, so I was trying to think of actresses who I really like, who I thought could carry the movie, and I thought of Evan Rachel Wood, forgetting that she was in the movie.
Nice.
And... but I still think that would
be
good casting.
Oh, she's in mine.
She'd be a great agent.
So I feel like it actually might be you could do a remake with her and then just not say that it's a sequel.
Well, that's actually, are you in my head? Because that's exactly what I did.
You're kind of right. Doing a kind of stealth remake that still acknowledges the original, much like Star Wars.
Or Evil Dead.
Their daughters had the same hair color. Like, there's two daughters.
Yeah, you get the idea of, the two daughters, the red hair, the black hair, and it carries forward consistently. Yeah. So there is something there. So why not?
And I also flipped mine where...
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. That's why I'm going there too. But I've also flipped the script to where the free-spirited one is not the stereotypical redhead. The redhead is going to be the studious one who's afraid, and the brunette's going to be wild and crazy. Let's just flip it a bit.
And then you can bring back Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman as their characters,
who I did.
Replacing the ants.
Yeah, I made them the actually.
Ants. You know, the ants could still be elderly because they're still around.
It would be a great role for them, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wish I would have thought that when I did my casting, but I love that.
Mm.
This is one of those times where I'm like, yeah, this could work, like, if you acknowledge the original. And then we can get away from the serial killer aspects. You can still have the redhead making the bad choices.
Yep.
And the more level-headed, black-haired one solving the problem. And then you can reverse who has the resolution. We didn't get the resolution for the red-haired one, so you'd focus that story more on the red-haired character.
Yeah, the person who's left and is trying to make a difference and a change from this whole thing.
Yeah, like focus on the girl who ran away from home rather than the one who got happily married.
Yeah, and you get the idea the cycle's going to happen because even the red-haired one, and I don't remember which one's which, I think it was Kylie, says, I can't wait to fall in love, much like Nicole Kidman as a child had done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Because it's the whole thing. Like, there's one of them that's like, oh, it's like, it's so intense. It sounds amazing.
Yeah.
And that's the whole difference. Kind of like, you have those two people who are like, an intense, crazy experience sounds like a lot of fun. But some people are like, that sounds nothing like fun.
And it's like, how would we handle a similar story now in a town that had gone from hating the Owens to accepting them? And I think, for the most part, it was envy, this weird mystery that they didn't understand. So when they were invited to do an incantation, they were like, oh, wow. I wanted that. That was secretly all they ever wanted. They're just like, well, you're this little club that we never get to see.
Yeah.
And when they do, they're all excited. And suddenly all this hatred goes away. I'm like, oh.
Well,
does that mean that people who hate witches just want to be witches?
Maybe.
Well, we're powerful AF.
Oh, yeah. So. I mean, why wouldn't you want to be?
Oh, part of the reason I love this movie, wanted to be a witch. Wanted to be either one of these characters. Any of these characters. It would have been amazing. I want to be a crazy old lady in a big, large house with long hair that's down to my butt and casting spells all over the place.
Right.
Is that how
that's
it works,
the dream?
I'm definitely working towards that point.
Okay.
Isn't that the dream, though?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just have a big garden, lots of black cats around.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that does sound great.
Yeah. I feel like that's what I'm slowly working towards.
If you can cackle like Witch Hazel from the Bugs Bunny cartoon, that is the goal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to scare people away so they leave you in peace.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I would change that. It doesn't have to be a cackle, just a loud, boisterous laugh with a snort at the end. It's very nice.
Yeah, that way more old effective.
Just a bigger lady who's just gonna laugh.
But you do
laugh.
The laugh with the snort at the end.
I do.
I usually edit out the snort.
You do. You do. And I appreciate that.
But our audience didn't realize that she actually does this.
That would be awesome. Oh, God. Imagine if that's how you casted a spell. Just like, okay, and then this spell is cast. Ha, 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 ha. And then it happens.
I'm leaving that one in.
It's like the nose twinkle in Bewitched.
Yes.
More realistic.
There we go. Yeah.
Well, Jeff, you kind of started out your casting. Why don't you give us the full go around here?
Well, I was thinking I really, really was trying to concentrate on the two sisters because I was really trying to think of some actresses who I really like who can do comedy and drama both fairly well. Because I feel like it's the type of movie and story that you need a little bit of deftness in both. Mm-hmm. But I also don't think it's a movie, like you were saying earlier, that you need super big A-listers for because that's also expensive. Mm. But so I was kind
and
of leaning towards.
You've got to prove that this is only going to make a certain amount of money, and especially in the time right now where romantic comedies are dead.
Totally.
Like, it's a dead genre right now. They're just not doing them outside of maybe streaming.
Well, besides superhero movies, they're not doing jack shit of much else either.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw horror go through it. It'll come back
totally.
At some point. Somebody will make a really good one, and it'll fire it off, and something really good and successful. So it just takes one to get the ball rolling again.
True.
Yeah, so I was thinking, other than Evan Rachel Wood, I was thinking maybe Alexandra Daddario as the redhead because I think she's really great and she doesn't really get cast in anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's very vibrant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she can handle comedy pretty well. And she's also a fairly decent dramatic actress.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of her best roles are ahead of her, I think.
Yeah.
Which is a lot because, like, she has kind of gotten into, like, the fame a little bit later, but she's kind of been around for a long time, has a decent recognition.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think the secret too, you need somebody who's recognizable, maybe hot with the younger crowd, but you know, it's still cheaper to bring mm-hmm. in as an actor. It hasn't hit the A-list 20 million or plus paychecks yet. Because mm-hmm. at some point, and that kind of sometimes works against a film when it's like, okay, are you seeing the character or are you seeing Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman? And it's mm-hmm. really hard to get past the fact that you're seeing these two big actresses mm-hmm. and are you buying into the part anymore or are you just seeing those people? I mean, even Nicole Kidman, I don't think's putting in her A-game in this one either. Her covering up her Australian accents, mm-hmm. it breaks a couple of times.
Yeah.
Something about when she's like watches balls mm-hmm. and it's very Aussie there. Yeah. I remember that it cracking. If yeah. you watch really closely, the actor laying there playing Jimmy Gorin,
yeah.
he almost breaks.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Apparently he had to spend like 3 days just lying down on that table.
Oh, man.
That was yeah. his job for 3 days. They're like, going, the poor guy, he's gotten beat up. They brought him in and they just beat him up a lot.
That's hilarious.
So do you have the ants?
Well,
or are you going to stick with the...
I kind of was... When that, like, now that we're talking... Now that we're kind of thinking Rachel Wood thing, I think it would be fun to have Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman around.
Yeah. If they could come in for scale.
Yeah. Well, I did the same thing because I'm like, I'm just doing dream casting. I'm not thinking too hard about the budget right now. I just want to figure out how to make it... The story is sort of what I was
hoping
to come
budget.
Here for help mm-hmm. right now. Because I'm like going, I just see what you guys had to say.
Yeah, and I like shifting the focus on the redhead, and we can either keep it in like that coming of age around 18, or we can move it into the 20-30s category like this film was for those characters.
I want it to be the 18 is where she leaves home, but then it's been over a decade, maybe 15 years before she comes back. Like, I want it to be like this whole life has happened for her.
Yeah, and we concentrate on the chaotic life of the redhead rather than
But you
the
can go back and forth between the
oh,
two
absolutely.
Of them as well.
I mean, yeah. absolutely. It would be a prime opportunity to do something like all of the similar things that happen to them in their lives, even though their lives are completely opposite.
Yes.
Like, obviously they're sisters and they have a huge familial bond, but it would never hurt to kind of drive that home a little more.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they are like, not only are they sisters who are close, but they're sisters who are really close, who are in a long line of witches.
They have a sense of each other.
It's a little bit closer than some others.
And the fun thing is, like, we do see the kids do stuff in this film when Nicole Kidman's trying to drive the police officer away with a spell during that pancake breakfast. And the kids take the syrup and dump it into the ocean.
Yeah.
Because they can see that there's this spark and they learn about the spell that Sally had cast as a child.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, they want this. And so they want to see this happen and their mom happy.
Absolutely. And like when they ask the questions, like going, well, dad had brown eyes, so I don't know who this is about.
Yeah.
And then when they kind of put it together, like a star, all this stuff, you threw a pancake. Yeah. And you're like,
and
oh
it's
my
great.
God.
A kid casts a spell, but it's kids who figure it out first. What's going on.
It's like almost like the spell was cast like with a lot of like childhood innocence and purity. That is like maybe why it worked so many years later.
And I think that's something that should carry forward in that feel throughout the film. And as they grow older, it's life that kind of corrupts them and corrupts the magic or whatever and corrupts their lives. And that resolution that comes out at the other side, it's not so much the romance as a coming of age movie.
Yeah.
And or it can be for this
like
go-around.
A coming of like magical age.
Coming of magical age. And a
magical
bonds.
Maturity and responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's
letting
a really
go
good
past.
Like hook for a story, because there's a lot of people where they'll go through X amount of years in their life before they'll really find the thing that they really get. And for some people, like, they get it right away. And for other people, they don't find that until they're in like their mid, late, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then the other thing, too, is where it's like, you might start out in this spot where you're open to everything you want all to happen. And just like a lot of experiences just have hardened you over the way. And maybe this is the whole thing of like maybe melting some of those walls at the end, like getting rid of that facade you've built because that of all this stuff.
I mean, I think that is another thing I might try to like, I would try to hammer home a little more is the whole thing that Sandra Bullock, even though she, or like, I guess her character, even though she is really sad and, like, all of this other stuff. Like, her life, bad things have happened, but she's given up magic. But her sister, you could say that her life is worse pretty easily. Yeah. And but she still practices magic, and she hasn't let that die within her. And I would maybe try to, like, get to that a little more as well.
Yeah, and also, or maybe also some of her magic has not been working as well, because these bad things have happened, and sort of she's hardened in a certain way, so it's not, she's not getting the outcomes she needs, because her heart isn't open when she's casting any of this. Maybe? I see thought over there.
Yeah, what are your thoughts? I feel them brewing.
Oh, yes. I'm still thinking.
I can hear them from here.
I like what all of you are putting down. I think it's...
Jeff, did you have a director, by the way, in mind before we get to
Really, actually. That's really tough because, yeah, as you were saying, romantic comedies are not doing super hot. And I wouldn't, get, you know, obviously give it to somebody, and it's not just a romantic comedy. But I don't really...
It's finding that director, a lot of movies. Find the balance.
Yeah. I feel like the type of vibe I would like out of it is something like Little Miss Sunshine, something that's more of like an indie dramedy. Where it's like it can go to some dark places.
Oh, that's what a director I picked with that kind of purpose in mind.
Yeah, yeah. I can't think of who directs Little Miss Sunshine, and not suggesting that I can't would think be the director, head, but I feel like it would have to be a woman, and I feel like obviously the person who makes it would have to have an interest in the subject matter, and I feel like I don't know who that would be, but I know that person exists.
They're out there. So definitely.
Well, then cast the spell. Get going on that. Bring them into your life. Yeah. I want a director who knows how to do magical sequences. I want a director who knows whose favorite color palette is.
Their favorite shape is a.
Their favorite shape is a sideways rectangle.
Now, did you have a cast in mind before this all coalesced into this current idea?
I didn't. So. Because Practical Magic is a movie I really love and rewatching, I was like, how would you remake this? It's already such a perfect movie.
I was with you on this. It was a struggle.
Yes, the IMDb 6.3 out of 10 and the Rotten Tomatoes. Let's play Guess Rotten Tomatoes.
I'm guessing it's lower than I would ever put it.
And I was shocked.
Okay, actually. Well, you don't get to play that.
It's probably something abysmally low, like a 3.
Okay, it's not that bad.
Okay.
16?
A little higher. The critic score was 21%.
Yeah.
But the audience score is completely the other direction at 73%.
I can see that.
On Rotten Tomatoes. So the audience certainly likes it more than the critics. Having watched this movie a second time now, you know, like, I don't dislike this movie, which is a step up from the last time we did a romantic comedy.
Yeah, absolutely. this is precisely why I chose this one.
It is far from perfect. Yeah. You know, for me, I'd stick it at around 55%, maybe, approaching 60. Like, it's got a strong cast. There's a great chemistry within the cast. It's the story itself that's kind of a little all over the place and feels nonsensical at times.
It really does have all the elements of a cult movie.
Yeah,
really. It does.
Like, it does have a lot going for it, but not quite enough for it to be, like, to hit that critical mass of popularity. Yeah.
It's the supernatural notes and stuff that I'm glad the romantic comedy stuff didn't seep in until the second half of the film. And even then, it's sweet, but it feels almost throwaway. It's like, oh, right, remember that thing we see at the beginning of the movie? We got to get to it.
Oh, yeah, there's this other guy, by the way.
Yeah, like, when's the green-eyed, one-blue-eyed guy going to show up?
Although, to be fair, that's kind of why I love this movie, is... Most of it is the aunts. Most of it is the sisters. Mm. The love interest is not the focus of the movie.
Yeah. I love that the aunts just...
like Frozen.
I love the aunts after the drunken night, and they realize, oh, they've done something. Mm-hmm. Like, it's time for them to clean up their mess, and they just fuck off for
they're like,
a good half hour of the movie.
Bye, witches.
That's the t-shirt.
You bring up a great point, Trish, where I actually think that this whole movie... Like, it really is a movie that thrives from being about the characters. It's more of a character study movie than it is about anything else.
Yeah.
It's, like, wild comparison, but it's, like, Lost, where a lot of people are mad about Lost until you really realize that everything that people thought they were into the show about doesn't matter. Absolutely. And the show exists because it's about characters.
Well, I'll tell you right away.
That's why people will stay.
I hated all the island stuff. I stuck around from beginning to end because of the character stuff. So I know exactly what you're talking about, but at least I was honest about why I was sticking around.
There we go.
I knew it was all ridiculous on the island.
Because, like, sure, it was interesting, but it's not like the mystery was the best mystery of all time.
I loved all the flashbacks.
It was just the character writing was very, very good, and it really was interesting explorations of the people.
Yeah, and that's something that this movie should concentrate on as well.
Yeah, because it is about, like, the moments of all them all, like, drinking it under the full moon and, like, being a family and stuff.
Oh, yeah. The whole thing is, I don't want them dancing naked under the full moon. Well, you know, the nudity is entirely optional.
And I love it. That's just it. The family aspects within this pagan culture within the household, it's still just family at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know? It's like the wholesome counterpoint to The Wicker Man, the last episode Leah was on.
It's the sweet version of Fast and Furious.
The Wicker Man, we were talking about how it's a society where all the kids are just raised pagan and that's what they know, and then that's their life.
Can we have Vin Diesel show up as his witch hunter character?
Oh my gosh. Oh my God.
And then
from D&D.
Family.
Oh. I want that to be...
But you're witches, I have to kill you.
I want that to be the flashback sequence.
You know, actually, here's an interesting... I'm only just having this idea right now as we're having it. Instead of Nicole Kidman's character, the redheaded sister falling for someone who is a serial killer who targets witch... Like, targets
women. She falls in love with a witch hunter.
Yeah.
Yes.
A witch hunter who specifically is a serial killer who kills, you know, witches.
Or who he thinks are witches. The guy's an idiot. He's like, oh, any powerful woman has got to be a witch. Like,
like if there's, you know...
That's a mental health issue.
Buying something in the crystal shop and...
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he thinks he's doing the right thing, but he is... Bonkers.
Give it a little meat and a little tension.
Yeah.
Love that.
Mm. That's a good hook.
That is so good.
Yeah.
Which gives him more drive from come back from the dead, or even if we don't keep him dead, if we keep that version of the character alive as a tormentor that chases after.
Because it is like a hatred of witches and stuff. It really does like give like, a lot more
would be,
anchor to
be an interesting
conflict.
Dynamic when you come to a town who's embraced them.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and I would love to see maybe part of it too is why he comes back. He's like, you have cursed me to be this ghost. Like, he blames them for what's happened to him, and he's completely at fault.
He's shouting like ancient Christian rhetoric.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
He's like, it's not our fault. You won't stay in your grave.
Yeah,
go
like
away.
Cemetery man. You have to set a good example. Get back in your grave.
That's right.
He's like, hey, I gotta
be a good corpse.
I gotta get back to heaven with all the flames and the poking. I mean,
there's lots of sodas.
when you rule out all of the other possibilities, it must be heaven. I was a good person.
Exactly.
I don't feel great, but it's all about how you look at it.
There we go. You know, life was a struggle. I guess that's what heaven is. I don't know.
What's that burning sensation every time I pee? Okay, Trish, with that, let's get to your casting.
Okay, for sure. So, yeah, I kind of did exactly sort of what you did, but again, not for budget. So, like, for Sally was Evan Rachel Wood. Because, I flipped the brunette and the redheaded versions because, like, the wild child's going to be the brunette this time. Mm-hmm. And then Jillian is Camilla Bell.
Okay.
Who was also one of the younger daughters.
I guess we've all taken into account that Alexandra just didn't want to come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I got half of the name right at the very least.
Yeah. And then Jimmy, I went with Bill Skarsgård. Oh, he is so beautiful, but he can do creepy. So let's do that.
Mm. That's good.
And then Gary is William Jackson Harper from The Good Place. Because I honestly, I feel very comforted by him. I feel very safe when he's around. I'm like, okay. So then you add the moral philosophy aspect. I'm like, okay, we're good here. And then Aunt Jet was Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
And then Aunt Frances was Nicole Kidman. And then for the Mark Feuerstein role, which is, I can't remember her first husband's name, the guy who dies.
Michael.
I actually went for Alexander Skarsgård. Because kind of, he's been doing a lot of goofier stuff, and I would like to see him. Yeah, I would like to see
I'll
a goofy
admit,
love
I forgot
story
to
between
cast
the two of
one.
Them. And then, I know I've just used her, but specifically for doing the Love Witch, Anna Biller.
Yes.
She would be good, yes.
She hasn't done another movie, I don't think.
I don't think so yet, but when you're talking about like an overall feel for this, and what she's, if she knows how to mimic that magical fantasy, beautiful, very rich.
Mm-hmm. Oh, just the way she does costumes and set dressing.
Lighting.
Yeah. I love how that movie looks.
I would love to see what she would make if she had money.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Ooh. I mean, you saw what she did without money.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And it was amazing. Yeah. So, well, I think you'll like what I've done here then. I wish I had thought of this idea with you guys about just aging the little girls up and continuing the story with the cyclic nature. I really like that. But I didn't.
Well, so, that's the magic of this podcast. We cast what we think we're going to do, and then we have no idea.
Yeah, exactly. I cast with the original film in mind. So for Sally, I went with, from The Love Witch, Samantha Robinson.
Nice.
Very nice.
Because I was thinking, let's get some cameos of witchy-type people that have done these type of roles before. For Jillian, maybe not witchy, but she's been in some comedy horrors and can do fiery and fun. Samara Weaving.
Nice.
Yeah, Ready or Not.
Well, The Babysitter.
Babysitter. Like, you can see that
she was doing witchcraft or some sort of satanic ritual.
They were doing a ritual yes, it applies.
You did it.
I did it. Okay, even unintentionally. For the ants, I kept changing my mind. So, originally for Aunt Jet, I had Frances Conroy from American Horror Story.
Oh, nice.
She's almost too on the nose, even though she did do Coven, and I think that was her best. I love the Coven season. It was fantastic. It's my favorite season. Mm-hmm. And then I switched it to Lily Taylor.
Oh, wow.
Mm. Also good.
Also good. And in The Conjuring, so...
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And so the same thing happened for Aunt Frances, who originally had Kathy Najimy from Hocus Pocus. And then I switched it to Virginia Madsen for some reason.
Oh, but I see it.
I thought, you know, Candyman still works, but I think I might go back to Kathy Najimy on that one. For Jimmy, he was just recently in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Emil Hirsch.
Oh, there we go.
And
where did he play again?
He'd be the serial killer character. And I was thinking to his role in The Autopsy of Jane Doe, where his character kind of turns dark near the later part of that movie. And I'm like, I would like to see him play a psycho. I think
he
can
do it.
He's
done some dark stuff.
Yeah. So I thought that was cool. And I went a little differently with Gary Hallett. For Gary Hallett, I went with Michael B. Jordan.
Awesome. Yep, I get it.
Handsome, charismatic, but not everybody has to be white.
That deer, exactly right.
Well, and like I can see him as like kind of law enforcement, but just like feeling his way out, seeing what's going on. Yeah.
And for the flashback sequence of the ancestor being hung, I actually had Lily Rabe because her character in Coven was like my favorite, and I was very upset when she died, and then they resurrected her later. Spoilers if you... It's been a couple seasons
ago. It's Apocalypse. Yeah. She's back, right?
She came back in Apocalypse. I'm like,
that's it.
Yay! And for my director, I went with Greta Gerwig.
Oh, yes.
Lady Birds, Little Women. She's an Oscar-nominated writer, actress herself. She could even be in the movie as one of the townspeople if she wanted to, because she's not a bad actress herself. I think she's good at balancing these sometimes serious subjects with humor as well, especially when you watch something like Lady Bird. I don't know if she knows anything about this subject matter, but maybe she should team up with your director.
Absolutely, yeah. So I think, well, the whole thing is, like, I think what we've all decided is this is about character. Mm-hmm. And, like, Greta Gerwig, she understands, she'll build it around if she understands a character. She knows what has to happen.
And that's it, exactly. Yeah. It has to be about character.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
I think my biggest change, the one thing I think I would add in is making the ants, instead of being, because it's not really established if they're sisters or what's up. I'd love to see them as an actual queer couple, and maybe Angela Bassett is one of the ants, because she's just
nice.
I mean, I do like that, but if they were sisters, it would make sense with the sisters and sisters and sisters.
True.
But then where does the mom fit in?
But you could, we don't see them have relationships, so why not? You could still have that relationship outside of the sisters as well. And then you can introduce a third person in there.
Because
most good covens and magic in general likes to follow the rule of three. So
That's true.
Yeah.
And that's a structure we don't see too much in this movie. We see lots of pairs.
Yeah. Lots of duality.
Yeah.
But I think that's sort of what they were getting at, too. There was the lightness in the magic, and there was the darkness in the magic. Yeah. And that was the duality of it.
Yeah. No, I'm absolutely positive so that's what they were doing.
Oh, and I think you also had some casting, Leah, for the serial killer.
Well, mostly because whenever I see the guy who plays Jimmy, all I see is Benicio del Toro.
Ooh!
So if he was in that role, I'd probably be like, okay.
No, but he can pull off, like, I think we discussed this in, like, Wolfman.
I feel like he's too old now.
He's too old. But
in his younger days, absolutely.
Yeah. But he can pull off charming. But remember what I was telling you in Wolfman? I don't understand his face. He can look very boyish in one shot and then 1,000 years old in the next, and I don't understand why.
It's like weird lighting or
like his face. I don't know if it just magically changes again.
Even one of his earliest roles when he's in that Bond movie. Even then it's like, okay, you look really young here and then you look like you're 50.
Or you're, are you 16 or 86? I don't know what's going on. I'm very confused by all this.
Just has lots of good character in his face,
I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the whole thing. He can magically de-age himself depending on the mood he's trying to convey on screen.
You know, when I was casting Gary, I was trying to find a guy who is very similar to Aidan Quinn in that unconventional handsomeness. And I couldn't think of anybody.
Yeah, there's a whole
thing. So I just went with handsome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was trying to think of who it would be, and I just slotted in Ryan Gosling or something. Just like, you
That's
know,
not bad.
I mean, he's a great actor, and I really love him. And
he would actually be really good in that role.
I think of him as unconventionally attractive.
Really?
Yeah. I don't see what I think a lot of people say they see.
And I think it's like also a lot of the roles he plays like kind of like highlights the weird aspects of like how he looks.
And honestly,
he's a very good actor.
He could be the serial killer as well, because he can be incredibly violent, like in Drive.
That was one thing I was really thinking when I was trying to do the casting as well, that what might be fun to play with was to cast two people. If you were doing, just because it's a remake and you want to play with people's expectations, to cast two people who could be handsome leads and then maybe flip expectations on which one turns out to be the villain.
Yeah. Oh, make Ryan Reynolds a serial killer and Ryan Gosling the sheriff. That's what you do. Make Ryan Reynolds be, oh God, Amityville Horror Ryan Reynolds, and then you're set.
No. We've already talked about this.
I know.
Didn't work.
Ryan Reynolds just shouldn't touch remakes. We just need to try it again. Because I don't want him to be too jokey. You just need to rein him in.
Oh, yeah. If he was in a movie these days, he's like... Well, actually, he'd also probably be expensive.
People like him right now. He's Spinal Tap, though. So he's always at 11. Yeah. I want to put him down to 5 or 6 if he's going to do this.
Because a lot of his best roles are very restrained. Like
The Buried... The one where he's in a coffin for the whole movie is really good.
I've heard that one's really good.
He's the only reason that Six Underground is even bearable to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and even though it's not, it's a wacky role, his role in The Voices is really good. And like some solid acting in that movie.
Oh, that was so good. I forgot about that
movie. And also it's hilarious.
The Darkness.
Also, actually, the woman who directed that, and her name escapes me, she did Persepolis.
She would be a good director for this
She also did the graphic novel for Persepolis.
And The Voices is
Did she direct Persepolis?
Yeah. She also directed the movie.
Oh, good
she
for also her. Did Not bad for somebody who...
Really good.
Yeah.
...didn't have any real experience. Or maybe she did, and I just didn't know that.
No, I think... I don't know if she's made very many movies, but she's very, very good. So.
Hell of an outing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, hey, there's another great female director. Hire more female directors.
There we go. Yes. Because The Voices, I think it's a very underrated one because it's dark and black and gory and terrible, but funny as hell.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, I shouldn't be laughing at this, but this is really funny.
Mm-hmm. It's like, in terms of like a juxtaposition between comedy and like... a serial killer movie, that's opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like a super bright musical at points.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, this beheaded person just makes me feel good about things.
I know.
Makes me feel good about myself.
You make you take those awful pills. I know I shouldn't take those.
All right. Well, that was Practical Magic from 1998. Yeah. Any last thoughts before we wrap up this episode?
Now I do want to see a remake of it. If it was
Embracing it, and it's like, well, you know, for romantic comedy, I do feel like there's a cult audience for that mm-hmm. movie now. Mm-hmm. So you know, you could probably carry it forward as long as you were judicious with that budget.
There's some things to be said for, like, not long ago, we just watched through all of The Lone Gunman, the X-Files spinoff.
Oh, nice.
It's really great. And, you know, it didn't hit. And Vince Gilligan.
It's because you had three lead actors who couldn't act.
It was a fun show.
I agree. It's but fun to watch, but they're terrible actors.
Well, that's fair.
It's sometimes the downfall with side characters.
Yeah.
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, those are side characters you can do. Timon and Pumbaa, side characters you can do. The Lone Gunman.
Timon and Pumbaa's movie is pretty
Lone Gunman, let's be realistic here, probably should have been like a 2-hour TV special.
Maybe.
And you do it once every year or something.
Oh.
But, well.
Let's do that.
I mean, I would watch that. I digress on The Lone Gunman. But, but Vince Gilligan was saying about it, it's one of the things he's most proud of in his career. And that was a show where, for him, he felt like if it came out a couple years earlier, it might have really hit.
Mm-hmm.
And if it came out a couple years later, it might have really hit. Sometimes something just comes out at the wrong time. And I kind of, the more I think about Practical Magic, that's what I think. If it came out in the 80s, like that story and the whole everything, it would have been bigger. And if it came out in like 2010, it probably would have been bigger.
Yeah, this might have been a sign of the times of like romantic comedies starting to go away.
Yeah.
It would still take a while.
Yeah, it just need to come out like the same time as Witches of Eastwick and like be more that vibe.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And that one's got some dark stuff that's all balanced out to like some real dark stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I almost snuck some of them in here and I'm like, I don't know how. Mm. Like they didn't quite fit.
Just throw them in somewhere in the coven.
Yeah.
We're like going, oh my God, how is Eastwick? And then keep going.
That's actually a whole other aspect we didn't even touch is how would you even tackle the whole thing with the phone tree?
I'm not even sure what it was.
Oh, it's a 1990s PTA type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the phone tree. If something happens, the person at the top will tell two people, and then they'll tell two people. It's like the shampoo commercial, and so on and so on.
It's a way to communicate
information, emergency information to people without the internet.
Oh, okay.
That was because of the time frame. So you wouldn't need the phone tree in this movie.
Yeah.
No.
But, like, how would she convince everybody to, like, come to her house who all hated her?
Well,
because the phone tree was for emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And they all, agreed that if someone called, they would all, you know, if it was an emergency, they would all have to help.
Yeah. And that's the whole point.
It's funny how they readily came over when you would think most of them didn't even believe in this stuff.
No. Well, I think that's part curiosity did a lot of the work of that foundry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, I love the scene where it's like, Sally just came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Amazing affirmation.
So great.
For which she wasn't very good at hiding it, you know.
No.
It's like
coffee.
And everyone's like, we know.
Yeah, well, I mean, she's as good at hiding it as a bunch of people in small towns who are quote-unquote confirmed bachelors.
Yeah.
I mean, people know. They just aren't saying it.
Am I the only one that wanted to know, like, how this hair tonic worked if you weren't supposed to rub it on your head?
I think the joke was it was supposed to be taken rectally, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking...
Like, it's a suppository?
Well, I was thinking it was the testicles because... We have like just because of the testosterone and stuff down there. So I thought it was, you know, making them work and doing all this stuff to bring the hair
back.
So
your hair will come back, but other things will be working pretty good too.
Exactly. It's about bringing balance.
It won't just make your hair grow.
I'm angry at everything.
Yes.
Okay, I think that may be the place we cut it. That's what we always like to cut it on, something crass.
Yep. A nice testicular joke will do.
Well, that was it for our Valentine's Day special. After a couple of years, Trish finally got another romantic comedy out of me.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, I knew to wrap it in a bit of a horror movie.
She did. She knew she needed to package it well to sell this to me.
Oh, yeah. You never see very many witch exorcisms.
No. In reality, instead of the magic stuff, you should have just said, Nicole Kidman, I'm like, all right.
Yeah. See, I didn't realize that. Oh, yeah. And FYI, I should have remembered Nicole Kidman around the time she was like doing birthday girl type of deals. That sort of goth Nicole Kidman. There you go.
I mean, tell me more.
Exactly. Well, if you've seen Birthday Girl.
I have.
I'm getting good at Jason marketing now.
That actress also in this movie.
Yes.
Okay. Cooling down.
Is it hot in here or what's happened?
Oh my.
I think Jason went somewhere else.
I'm
Jason,
back.
Jason, we gotta end the show.
Don't go to the place inside your head quite yet.
Porn parody's already happening.
We were discussing a bunch of stuff with the microphones earlier. What's going on today?
Valentine's Day.
Yeah, happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
There you go. All right, well, this went off the rails, so make sure you tell everybody. Mm-hmm. Get onto your phone tree and tell everybody about Invasion of the Remake. Call them, write them, tweet them, whatever you need to do, and help them get their
earballs
on this show.
Yeah, it's like pay it forward.
That's right. You
call two people on your phone tree and tell them about Invasion of the Remake. Tell them to tell two people.
And they'll tell two friends, and they'll tell two friends, and so on, and so on, I think our guests are not old enough to remember that reference. I feel very old right now.
It's okay, because they will know that you can follow us on our social media, which is a very more modern thing to do. And you can do that at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com if you want to email us with like the good old days and email us a letter and tell us your thoughts, your questions, your suggestions, your comments. Absolutely. We'll take fan challenges. If we think it's a good one, we will do it. Yes. Or at least try to put it in the back of our minds to do it. I occasionally will get suggestions, and because of our early fan challenges were so crazy.
It's hard to out-crazy what we did.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like they're not quite up to snuff.
Like, yeah.
Really? You know, after Paint Your Wagon and Hard Rock Zombies, a lot of the suggestions lately have been, yeah, we'll get there, I guess.
Our baseline for bat shit is much higher than you're giving us credit for.
We tried to remake Meet the Feebles.
Yes.
Didn't that get remade? It was called The Happy Time Murders.
I think that might be what they were trying to package it as.
Yeah. Yeah, don't watch that.
No.
Don't watch that.
It was one of those ones where it didn't go far enough, and then too far at the same time.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, well, next week we're going to get into Women in Horror, because February is also Women in Horror Month, and we got a great comparison episode that I know Sam's chomping at the bit to do, and he will be returning next week. I'm not going to tell you what it is yet, because spoilers. You'll see it come up and then go watch the movie. I could tell you ahead of time, so you couldn't watch the movie, but it's going to be where's the fun in that? It's going to be in your feed, and then you can see it in the feed, and then you go, okay, I'm going to watch the movie before I listen to the episode.
Absolutely.
Or you'll listen to the episode, and we'll convince you to watch the movie, or we'll give you good reasons why you shouldn't.
That's true. Or, most preferable of all, you listen to the episode, it makes you watch the movie, and you like the movie so much that you listen to the episode again.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Or alternatively, you listen to the episode, watch the movie, and you're like, hey, I have some ideas. Why don't I just email invasion3remake@gmail.com?
And while you're at it, you can also email Netflix or Amazon Prime saying, hey, this podcast made me watch that movie on your service. Maybe you should sponsor them.
Absolutely.
That's true.
Dollar, dollar.
Yeah. Right now we're casting the spell of what we want to bring into the universe right
That's
now.
That's right.
Exactly. Our perfect subscriber will get 5-star reviews.
They're like, I have it on automatic download. Don't ask me to do anything more than that.
That perfect subscriber was like, I wished for this podcast too.
It is going to be beautiful.
All right. I know right now they're wishing this would actually end. So that's it. I've been Jason.
Sam.
Okay.
It's still Sam.
I've been Jeff. I come back as him.
I have been and will continue to be Leah.
And I still continue to be Trish.
That all got messed up.
We'll try it again. Round two.
I've been Jason.
I've been Leah.
I've been Jeff.
And I continue to be Trish.
There we go. That worked out much better. And we are out of here.
Dearest Jilly, sometimes I feel there is a hole inside of me, an emptiness that at times seems to burn. I think if you lifted my heart to your ear, you could probably hear the ocean. In the moon tonight, there's a circle around it, sign of trouble not far behind. I have this dream of being whole. I'm not going to sleep each night wanting, but still sometimes, when the wind is warm or the crickets sing, I dream of a love that even time will lie down and be still for. I just want someone to love me. I want to be seen. I don't know. Maybe I've had my happiness. I don't want to believe it, but there is no man, Julie. Only that moon.